Hey, this is Eben Matthews. Super excited to present this latest episode of Mythmakers in our Makerverse series. This time we're talking to the creators of a brand new series on Macroverse. This one is called Black Birch. It's beautifully drawn. It's incredibly compelling and gorgeously, very well written. We really love it. We think it's something special, and we hope you'll check it out. The first episode is going live at the same time that this episode is going out. So if you're listening to this, you can go read that on the Macroverse app right now, and we hope that you will. And then there will be new episodes every Thursday until the first season is done. But great chat with these guys. They'll talk about who they are and their background and kind of what they've been up to, how they've approached the series, the process, the creative, where it came from, how they met. And we'll get into some other stuff as well. So really great chat. Love these guys. Love their work. Read Black Birch. And yes, that is a cat at the beginning.
This podcast is called Mythmakers. We talk to people about storytelling and the kind of art and craft of storytelling. We're super excited about this episode in particular for a couple of reasons. One is we're big fans of our guests' work here. And number two, we're launching a series that they created together on Macroverse tomorrow. So exciting times all around. I think, Eduardo, you're in New York. Is that
That's
right?
That's correct. Yes.
That's correct. And Juan, you are in
Yes.
Japan. Yes. Ah. So we're also representing the world at the moment while we're all locked down individually.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. Good evening and good morning.
good morning, good evening, and soon to be good night. So if you don't mind, if you each of you would just kind of take a minute and introduce yourself and just give a little snapshot kind of into your background or kind of what you would want people to know about you and what you do, that would be awesome.
JD, you go first.
Hi, my name is Wando. I am a comic book artist and writer. I've been working professionally since about 2005, right? Cat agrees with me. That's right.
Yep.
And I started as a cover artist at Marvel and DC. I spent about 10 years there. And the last 5-6 years, I've pretty much been working on the indie circuit, mostly at Aftershock Comics. And now I'm writing and drawing my own stuff. So it's been a really awesome journey, you know, working in the comic book industry up to this point.
Yeah.
Very cool. Awesome.
And it's for anyone that doesn't know, we'll put some links in the show notes, but the work is just stunningly beautiful. Like I've been a fan for a long time. Yeah.
We're trying.
Yeah. Eduardo.
So my name is Eduardo Cintron. I'm a director and writer in New York City, and I mostly work on TV commercials, but I'm also, I know I write narratives. I'm working on a couple of features. I shot two shorts last year, which are right now going around the festival circuit. Actually, right now, it's one of them is currently at Oxford, and next week both of them are going to be at the Switzerland International Film Festival, and I wrote Black Birch with Wando, and it's amazing. It's even something that I've been trying to finish. When did we start it? One like 2 years ago?
I think towards the tail end of 2018. Like the summer of 2018, I think we got the project
that
up
long,
running, right? And then 2019, we. 2019, we did the book.
Right. Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. There's the story of Black Birch has changed a couple of times in different formats. So, and then when I met Juan at New York Comic Con, I knew right away. It's like, okay, this is the story I want to make as a graphic novel, and I think you'll be perfect mm-hmm. for it. Yeah. So, yeah.
I love that pitch. So you had not met previously, and you like walk up and you're like, I love this, and I have a story for you.
I walked to his booth and I said, oh, we have a friend in common, which right. we do. Yeah, it's a good friend of both of us, and then we from there he's yep. like, oh yeah, and then we start talking, and then And yeah, I think we went to a bar afterwards, or we had some food afterwards.
I think you had asked if I was available. I think at that time I actually wasn't available, and I recommended
you were not. Yes,
I recommended my friend Ricardo, which I think you
Ricardo,
did, Ricardo Lopez, and I think you did some work with him. And then I think it was the next summer that we got in touch again, and that's when the Blackbirds project.
That is correct. Out. Yes, that is correct. Right. And then, so the next summer, then we start working together. He was like, "Hey, actually, you hit me on the same that you were available finally," and then I said yes right away. And we met in New York, and you were here for a week or something, and we had lunch.
Yeah. And we started writing. And you had shown me,
And the rest is history.
Eduardo's actually a really fantastic artist, and I remember you showing me some of the early boards that you did, and I thought it was kind of like awesome. I'm like, why do you want me to draw, dude? I'm like, this is really good stuff. So that was good, because Eduardo is really good visually, and he was able to write as well as sort of like illustrate his ideas when we first started this project. So that was super cool.
I just want to clarify. I was making the storyboards for what I thought it would be like a feature or something like that, you know, in my mind. Mm-hmm. And I show them my rough storyboards, and of course, what JD can make in one day, it will take me like 3 months. So
there's the answer to why do I want you to draw. You're faster
and better and much better, of course.
Yeah. Also, not to cause too much mischief, but that we've got a friend in common is probably a pretty good way to So it sounds like, you know, you had the initial idea as a feature, and actually for anyone that hasn't yet seen the book or read the series on Macroverse as it's about to start coming out there, give people like a little synopsis. So it's, you know, try to avoid heavy spoilers, but Black Birch is the series that we're talking about, and just kind of how do you kind of tell people what it's about if you don't want to.
For sure. It's Black Birch is a small town, the town itself breed children for economic gain, basically. And then you have all these mothers, you know, popping up kids, and then they sell them. But the story, the story is about this control, the town of Black Birch. And basically they have their own unspoken rules. And one of them, you know, one of the families starts to break them, breaking the rules, and you know, a lot of blood it spilled in the process. And I don't want to give spoilers, though. That's why I'm like, oh, okay. So but basically volume one, the first arc, is how one family takes the power of, you know, of the town, basically.
Yeah, nice. Very cool. So then talk to us a little bit, like, you know, I'm curious about the history a little bit. And, you know, we do tend to kind of try to dive deep into the creative process, and as we talk to people here. So if you were initially kind of thinking of it as a feature, or, you know, more as a film, you know, how did that change or evolve? And then also I'm curious, like, what was the moment where you're like, actually, this would make sense?
So, I mean, every time someone asks me about what do? I say I create stories. For me, I'm a storyteller, basically. And I don't think about the medium so much. In the beginning, I just start to think about, oh, this could be a really good story. And then I start developing the story in my mind, and I make notes and so, all that kind of stuff. And of course, being so deep in the film industry, the first thought is like, let's see how this looks as a screenplay. But the story changed so much, and at one point I was like, you know what, I think to start, I think the graphic novel will be it's ideal because of the the pace and the format, and also I can let other people see the angles and see the almost like the motion and the pace of the story right away, and I don't have to wait until we produce a whole like film, you know. But the story itself, when I finally said, okay, I think this is going to be a graphic novel, a lot of it, like the core of the story changed a lot, because I only took from the original story, I only took what I liked the most, which is this town is breeding all these children, which is just, it's not the plot point. That's not the plot point of the whole story. And there's a lot of character development. Correct. So that's just a situation. So I like that, and then I start writing the graphic novel in comic format, and that's why when I reach out to JD.
Yeah, that's awesome. And for you, Juan, what was it that kind of attracted you to the story, or how did you find your way into it? It's like, oh yeah, this is a world that I want to help kind of bring to life, or
Definitely, I think like right from the start, I love the story, you know, and I had known through our mutual friend about Eduardo. So like, you know, he is like legit, and I totally respect his skills and what he does. So, you know, right off the bat, I knew that this was probably going to be a really cool story. And I remember us meeting and talking about it. And I just absolutely loved it. I love that kind of sort of adult fare. You know, it's very much, you know, HBO kind of level.
Yeah.
You know, dark, noir, thriller. And I'd seen the storyboards that he did. And I was just like totally jazzed about it, you know. And then I've been so excited about working on the indie side, you know, once I left Marvel. That this was just one of those stories that you can come across that you probably wouldn't find in the hardcore mainstream area yet.
Absolutely.
And I like that. I like working on projects that, you know, maybe nobody else can see it, but if I can see it, it's like, oh, this will definitely work, you know. And I had an experience with a previous project, also with like a writer who was writing for the first time, a comic book, and we got that published. So I kind of felt that there was like a lot of really awesome material that maybe people are overlooking because they're so sort of, you know, into their own business, into their own stories. So I kind of like finding these kinds of stories out there. And I really thought it was fantastic. I was like, yeah, this is totally right up my alley. And here we are, you know, year and a half later, you know, the book is done, complete. It's a really nice graphic novel. And I'm so happy that we have like a couple of platforms for it now, so that we can get it out into the public. And, you know, this is like a legit story, and I think people will definitely enjoy it.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, no, for sure. Awesome. No, it's great. And I, you know, the thing that strikes me right off the bat, and that I, you know, struck me when I first saw it, is, you know, there's a, you know, you're kind of playing with, and this is something I always respond to, is you're kind of playing with familiar ideas and tropes, but you found kind of a new take on it, or a new, you know, a new way into it. And to me, that's the child, you know, breeding element of it. It's like, you know, almost, you know, it's like you could almost map a lot of the story onto like, you know, the struggle for drug, you know, kingpin supremacy, or, you know, that kind of thing in various, you know, in various genres, but you're doing it around kids, and that just adds a different, you know, element to it. And it's kind of both, you know, chilling, because especially for those of us that have kids, the idea of that is kind of horrifying, but at the same time, like, you know, it's just like the in some ways the most precious commodity that one could be dealing in. So I mean, where did that come from? Like, what was the genesis of that? I'm curious, kind of, you know, you're just like, I want to find a way to torture kids in my story, or you know, if there's one thing that I want to do, it's torture kids somehow.
No, well, actually, the funny thing is that they do care about them in this story. They're actually never torture or anything like that. Mm-hmm. Actually, they make sure that they're like, they're well fed, and they get schooling, and they go, and even when they sell them, they want to make sure that they are selling them to the right people. So it's not that's one of the things that interests me the most. It's like, it's a business, but they do care about the business. And yeah. and for me, it's I always love how to, you know, stories that push how people behave and why people behave in this in certain ways, because of either preconceived ideas of from family or from culture. So why you act the way you act is a lot because your parents act that way and things like that. That type of themes, overall, like concepts, I'm very, you know, I've been drawn to those concepts from many years now, and the family structure for me it's been always so crazy. For me, it's like, wow, you learn all these things and you act and you speak and you do everything in a specific way. Like, why, you know, why do we, why can we not eat this or that, or why do we do this week, and why we celebrate these days? And, you know, so for me, I was trying to create a utopic world. Basically, it's something that happens with everything I write. I'm kind of like everything I produce and write, it's kind of like the world that I imagine and I would like to live in instead of the world I live in a way. Does that make sense?
Right.
So that's like the core. That's, I mean, this may sound a little bit conceptual and big, but that was the main core of Black Birch. This is the family structure, and what does it mean to have a kid, and what does it mean to run a business for this small town, which it's not clear in this story on the volume one, but that was the only way they could survive. And with that, you know, that moment, which is like decades before Black Birch.
I think that does come across. At least that would be.
There's hints of that it's been happening for a long time. For example, in other volumes, hopefully we'll go back into why. And that started, you know?
Well, it sounds like part of what I heard and part of what you said is a sort of fascination with the idea of kind of lineage and where do we kind of pick up the rules and regulations of the way that we operate in the world, and how does that play back into family and history and, you know, kind of questioning or not questioning kind of why do we do the things that we do? In some way. Yeah. That's really cool. Super cool. I want to ask you, about kind of the actual nuts and bolts of the kind of writing process, especially if this is kind of your first foray into graphic novels. But before we do that, let's turn to Juan for a second. So, you know, one of the things that I have always loved about your work, Juan, is it, you know, I think a lot of what I've responded to in some of the earlier stuff that I've seen is you've got a really, really strong kind of graphic sensibility in a lot of your work, where it's almost really a hybrid of what people might think of as, you know, more graphic design and illustration combined. And especially in the cover work. And I think it's, you know, it's obviously, I mean, I think it's really fantastic. But it feels like what you've done here is a little grittier and a little more organic in some ways. And it still has a, you know, kind of a strong design aesthetic, but, you know, it fits the material really well. And I'm just curious kind of what some of your thought process is, or, you know, is it just the way that is kind of the way that it felt, or was that an intentional choice, or kind of how did you approach?
Yeah, I would definitely say it's more of the way it felt. Like I mentioned, these kinds of stories are actually really in my wheelhouse. I like sort of like human stories, but they're actually very dark and gritty, because that is a big part of human nature. And that is a part of what creates conflict in any kind of situation. So, you know, going back to what Eduardo was talking about, this idea of like family dynamics, and this sort of town that in essence, you can almost say it's cultish, you know, that I don't think they really participate in the broader sense of the world. But they understand that they have this commodity, which is children, that allows them to sort of survive and to thrive within their own community. And I thought that was so crazy, right? Because, like you said, you know, the most precious thing that one can have is like a human life. But to them to kind of treat it like a commodity, you know, I just thought that was really cool. So that sort of helped influence, you know, my approach, you know, and I have a very basic approach to everything that I do. Graphic sort of design is I think just naturally baked into it. You know, the way that I color stuff and whatnot. So I think this story just kind of mm-hmm. helped me settle into, I don't have to worry about like superhero stuff or crazy space battles or technical things like that. So it was very much grounded in these characters, you know, and that was fun to do because, I mean, some people think, you know, that's the most yeah. boring part of comics is like drawing talking heads, you know, and I actually think that's maybe the most exciting part because you need to build drama and excitement just within what the characters are doing. You know, they're not fighting each other, but they're discussing things, really important things. And I think Eduardo did a great job in sort of framing all of that with the way that he describes the scenes. So it kind of fit perfectly with the way that I naturally work anyway. And I think it definitely came across in the whole series.
Mm-hmm. No, it's gorgeous. There's no question. There's mm-hmm. like there's a yeah, cinematic no question. Element to it, which is kind of above and beyond what you see in a lot of comics work, I think, mm. which is amazing. And then actually, so one I wanted to ask, like Eduardo has did a bunch of storyboards, you said, for the, you know, as the kind of part of the initial concept and treatment. Mm-hmm. How much did those ultimately influence the art that you kind of that ended up in the book, as it were? What was that? How did that process work?
You know what? I would say it gave me the foundation for like, okay, I know exactly sort of where to go with this. And specifically, like, if you look, I think it's maybe even the opening page where there's, like, this silhouette of a house mm-hmm. and a tree. I remember seeing the storyboard that Carlos – God damn it. I'm sorry. I keep calling you Carlos. Carlos is
– My good friend and co-collaborator, Carlos.
And Eduardo were two guys that basically hired me more or less around the same time, and I was doing, like, these two projects almost simultaneously. But we're all homies, yeah. so it's
all good.
But Eduardo had done this really awesome sort of shot of that – sort of silhouette of the house, and I was like, oh man, it was like in one shot I kind of caught the whole style of and the mood nice. Of what I thought the story was going to be. That's why I love working with mm-hmm. Eduardo, because he's so visual. Like his scripts, you know, they are cinematic because he is a filmmaker, and that does translate well within the comic book medium. So my job is to sort of balance what would be considered storyboards or cinematic shots with the medium of comics and using mm-hmm. that art form to really craft this story the way that we did.
Nice.
And I was really upfront in the beginning. I told him that I was very, very picky with the framing of things. You know, there were even like, I was, you know, maybe, I don't know, JD, you have never told me if how my scripts compare to other writers, but I kind of like, I was so specific on this one sometimes, and I told him, I told all this before we started working together. I told him, okay, this is how I like to work, and giving you camera angles and you know, yeah, things like that. this is a, you know, bird eye. This is a, like a profile. This is, mm-hmm. And then I think the collaboration was perfect, and he understood that. He sent me some layouts, and then I gave him notes sometimes on very, very few pages. Just like, for example, just you know, make this a little bit more three-quarter, or make this a different angle, or a little mm-hmm. higher, the camera a little higher, or the camera a little lower, whatever, you know. He was cool with that in the beginning. So I was like, well, if you're cool with that, with me working like this, you know, then this is going to work. So let's do it.
Totally.
That's very cool. It's funny because mm-hmm. we have a similar, yeah, very both cool. of our backgrounds as entertainment industry as well. When we're writing for comics, especially our original work, we approach it very much the same way. And then it becomes this to and fro with the artist about, mm-hmm. great, actually, hey, if we do it this way, does this work? You know, it becomes this kind of evolving conversation, which is actually very exciting, which is kind of cool. So then Eduardo, so obviously you're used to writing obviously traditional yep. scripts. How mm-hmm. what what was the adaptation process going from kind of movie script to comic scripts? And was it a matter of putting in, essentially you're putting in your shot list as you're going? Because I always find that with comics is it's kind of a combination of writer and director as you're going through the writing process, which is kind of unique.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm, like JD said, I'm very visual. Even for the stuff I shoot, like mm-hmm. even for the commercials I shoot or direct, or the short films and everything, I storyboard myself everything, mm-hmm. you know, every single shot. So in terms of the script itself, I research the structure, the format a little bit. You know, I went online, and before I started writing the graphic novel per se, I was like, let me make sure I understand exactly how it's formatted and all that stuff. But in terms of,
and then you found that there is no format.
I think I found like a script from Dark Horse or something like that. And I was like, oh, okay, I understand. Mm-hmm. I understand this. I can make it work. But it was quite easy for me. I'll be quite honest. It's, nice. It just felt so natural because I've been a comic book fan and reader since I'm like 9 or 10 years old, and I've been mm-hmm. a fan and all my life basically, and so I understand pace, I understand arcs in 30 pages, like I said before, from the script, from the feature, from the original script, I only took very, very few things. So I was almost like starting from scratch, almost like in mm-hmm. terms of the actual plot lines and of course I wanted to make sure that every chapter in the book has their own little arcs, mm-hmm. which was for me important as well, and mm-hmm. and that at the end we have developed the main character, which is Hazel. Mm-hmm. So I just want to make sure she has a little journey, and then she has some conflict and all that, you guys are writers mm-hmm. as well. So
absolutely.
like fundamentals. Yeah. yeah. Well, I mean, you just hit like every piece of advice that we probably generally give people that are trying to, make comics, who are used to writing traditional scripts, who are not necessarily directors. And I think that mm-hmm. might be actually kind of the secret sauce here, is that you've got a background in visuals, mm-hmm. and especially if you're making shot lists and storyboards and stuff as well. And so it's challenging for a lot of traditional film and TV writers to mm-hmm. think about like a single moment and then another single moment and then another single moment, where so many times we see people try to write comics and graphic novels and they're panel one, character one walks into the room, lights a cigarette, sits down and says to panel says to character B. So it's great that you were able to kind of make that transition, and I'm gonna put you on the spot here and see if we can get a hold of, if you'd be willing to share a couple of your storyboards that maybe we could kind of put out as an example of kind of like, oh, here's what you started
with,
and
for sure
you ended up.
Yeah,
I'll be really interesting for people to kind of see that.
I'll send you a few JPEGs.
Oh, great! Yes, yeah. Be fascinating to see.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, super cool. Like, love to share that as part of this conversation. So, yeah, I mean, we love the book. We're really excited to bring it onto Macroverse, and mm-hmm. Hopefully you'll be as excited as we are. But I think one of the things that I think works so well with a project like this, and it's kind of along the lines of everything you guys have been saying, is there is a sort of cinematic quality inherent in the book in and of itself. And then what we try to do is really lean into that, so that, as you're kind of tapping through it, you are actually kind of creating sort of a hybrid of a comic and an animatic in some ways, where you're able to really kind of think about how you move through a scene, in addition to, you know, kind of the beat by beat of the panels. So I hope you guys are as excited about it as we are.
We're literally discussing it minutes before we got on the phone to talk to you guys. So, yes.
Awesome.
Was it hard? Was it hard to?
No, not hard at all. I mean, I think that's what's, you know, we do find, like, you know, some of the, especially the adaptations that we've worked on with people, you know, there, it is a lot, there's a big variety. And what we always try to do is try to, you know, our main goal is twofold when we're adapting stuff for Macroverse. Is number one is to make it feel completely native on the platform. So ideally someone never, you can't see the seams, essentially. You can't see that it wasn't intentionally crafted for this format. And then number two is, you know, we try to really take the cues from the original work as much as we think we can to, you know, sometimes we're probably right and sometimes we're probably wrong, but, you know, stylistically and, you know, kind of the way that the writing works or the way that the art works, like, we try to take cues from that as far as how we format stuff. So, you know, we're using the same fonts that you guys use, and we're using the same, you know, general, you know, kind of approach to, you know, how we think the scene is meant to kind of work when you're shifting points of view between characters and that sort of stuff. And so the expression of that is different in this different format, but we're trying to stay true to the intention as much as we can see it in the work that you guys did. Bring that to life. So you'll have to let us know how we did on that front, but that's our goal. And the cool thing about it is it's digital. It's not, we can make, you know, tweaks and changes along the way too. So, you know, as it rolls out, if, you know, we want you guys to also feel free to go like, oh, you know what if we switch those two taps? Or Eduardo, you know, it's like one of the things that's kind of fun in this format too, is, you know, oh, I really always wish there was an extra line of dialogue here, but there just wasn't room for it on the page. Like, you know, we can put that in. So it has some, you know, kind of additional flexibility around that too. And you know, we kind of think of it as this like ongoing kind of living thing that you can, you know, tweak as desired to kind of express it in this different way.
It should be
really fun. And I think people will really dig it
on the podcast. I thought it was great. I thought it was really cool because immediately a different experience, you know.
Yes.
Like right off the bat, I was like, oh, okay, this is cool, because it's like my work and Eduardo's stuff. And I'm like, oh, okay, this is really interesting. So I checked out the preview, and I'll get the full episode tomorrow, I guess. Right?
Yep.
I thought it was cool. I can't wait
to absolutely
follow this book on the platform, because you guys broke it down into, you said it'd be like maybe 10 to 12 episodes on a weekly basis.
Probably going to end up being 12, that's but cool. It'll be somewhere between 10 and 12 by the time it breaks down. So it'll be fun. It's, you know, it's one of the things that we also like and that we found seems to be pretty effective, is it gets you a chance to kind of engage with people over a slightly longer period of time too. So it's, you know, it's something that we can kind of be, you know, putting in front of people on a weekly basis over the next few months, as opposed to, you know, here it is and you got it.
What's funny for me is
like moving on. So,
which is a weekly comic, which is completely different to the American style of kind of monthly books. So this feels far more like what I grew up with kind of Judge Dredd and Strontium Dog and whatever else. Like, so it's kind of fun. I feel like, oh, it's 9-year old me just doing this kind of professionally. This is great.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So Eduardo, in a really for both of you, but I mean, Eduardo, you guys are, I'm sure you kind of alluded to thinking about volume two and the graphic novels, and kind of, you know, moving the story along there. Where does that live kind of in the world at the moment, or, you know, kind of in the process of kind of getting that moving? And then second question is, I'd be surprised, but maybe not, if you're not also thinking about, you know, what is the film or TV version
of this? Right now, we're working hard on making sure the first volume is out and reach out as, you know, reach out to many people as possible, even people in the yeah, like you said, in film production business, in the industry, so they see that this is out mm-hmm. there and see we can take it to the next level, see we can, you know, take the IP and make, I don't think it's a feature right now. I think it's more like a TV show, more like in my mind I have this,
yeah,
the tone I think is around the season one of True Detective-ish.
Yeah. True
Outcast.
That's what mm-hmm. came to mind for me, yes.
Yeah. Exactly. I got
that amazing
True Detective. Like,
Ozark is definitely something that it's very close to Black, you know, the tone, it's very close to Black Birch, or the other way around. Black Birch is close to Ozark. And the for example, also I was actually watching Outcast last week. I've probably binged the whole thing in 3 days. I was
I haven't seen that yet.
Oh, it's so good.
Wait, this is the Cinemax one, right?
It's Showtime.
Cinemax,
Oh, Showtime, okay. Because they...
Wait,
is it?
Oh, it's out there. Either Showtime or HBO. It's one of them.
It's out there.
No. Sorry. Outcast is on Cinemax. Yes.
It is Cinemax, right? Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And which I love, by the way. It's amazing. I was thinking about Outsider. Sorry.
Outsider, yeah. That's another one that kind of has that.
There you go. Yeah.
That's the one I just binged for 3 days.
Yeah.
But I definitely loved Outcast. For sure.
You know? Right.
Yeah.
So that's in that world. I'm definitely thinking about the main arc of the volume 2. I think I'm hoping this is a weird year, as you may No.
No, what's different? I have no idea.
We've noticed.
So it is a very strange year. And right now in my mind, hopefully I'll start writing Black Birch Volume 2 at around October or November. I'm waiting for New York Comic Con basically and see if we're gonna be able what's going to happen if we're going to have a Comic-Con, if we're not going to have a Comic-Con, you know, I'm waiting for that and to take a couple of decisions on the second volume. But of course I would love that. I would love that for sure.
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah.
I think Hazel has a lot to do.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Very cool. no question. Yeah, no spoilers, yeah. But no question. She's got a lot to do.
It's going to be fun, for sure. It's going to be fun.
Yeah. Yeah. That's super cool. Well, I love the world you guys have created here. And we're super excited to kind of adapt it and bring it into this kind of different experience of the material. And you know, excited for people to see it and react to it in all the different ways that they might over its lifespan. What else are you guys consuming here in quarantine land? Like, what have been some of the things that you've kind of enjoyed?
I've been watching so many things, and reading a lot and writing a lot. I've been writing a lot, and I'm watching. I'm watching Billions. I'm watching Watchmen. I'm watching. I already finished that. Watchmen. It was really cool. I love it.
Amazing.
So,
yep.
Which one?
Watchmen on HBO.
I loved it. Yeah, absolutely loved it.
That was fantastic.
It sucks that they're not gonna keep going with it. I was so bummed. I was like, what? I thought it was a great first season, and
they're not going to do it. I thought that
there's some conversation around it, I believe, but there it was conceived as a one-off miniseries.
Yeah.
Oh wow. Okay.
I'd be.
Yeah. So I mean, HBO definitely wants to do more. So far, Damon Lindelof has said, you know, unless there's a bolt from the blue,
which is great,
doesn't want to do more. That just for the sake of doing more, which I think is kind of interesting, and can certainly respect.
I'm sure he's very cagey about finishing, completing things in a satisfying way. You know.
It's like I finally nailed the ending.
And the way it ended, it was definitely a cliffhanger for us.
Fantastic.
You know, like it's so.
For sure.
Many things. I'm finishing Handmaid.
Oh, I haven't seen that yet. I heard so many good things about that.
You're braver than I am. I struggled through season one and loved it, and just got an episode into season two and was like, I can't do this.
It's horrible. That's the type of thing that I enjoy the most, you know, damage people and society. You know?
I can't tell from your work at all. No.
I have this power to write about damaged people, which someone told me about that. So.
Care Bears.
Your apartment is decorated with puppy dogs and rainbows and flowers.
I've been doing all that stuff. I've been writing a lot. I've been it's like I'm very productive when I'm by myself, which is even without the pandemic, even without the whole situation, it's something that I'm used to. So it's not a big change in my life. I spend a lot of time thinking, and to be able to think and write, I have to have complete silence, for example. I'm not the kind of person that can work at a coffee shop.
Right.
Because I get distracted so easily. I'm like, I start watching people, which I love, you know, just watching people. But if I need, yes. But if I need to write,
people, even better. But
if I need to write, and if I need to like think about the stories, I need to be by myself with, you know. So
yeah.
So I've been taking this time. The only big change for me is that I'm not shooting. That's all.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to be as productive as I can to keep my sanity.
Yes. Juan, what about you? Yeah.
Yeah.
Juan,
what about you? What have you been?
My lifestyle, you know, normally is very quarantine-like to begin with. You know, and I think most comic book artists will kind of refer, like, really, there's something going on in the world? I don't know. I haven't left the house in 2 weeks, you know.
Exactly.
You know, but I've been watching so much stuff. And then I realized, like, this weekend, though, because, like, I've been getting stir crazy. I think a lot of people are getting stir crazy. I think the whole world is, you know, like, you know what? Fuck this virus or not. I want to go out. I want to do something. You know, so I think we're all kind of feeling that. So I'm starting to feel that even the stuff I'm binging on is not impacting me the way, you know, it was before. I kind of feel like the world is over. The world is this. What's the point of watching anything anymore? There's nothing to do. We can't go out and capitalize on our dreams. You know? So I'm feeling a little bit like that, where it's where I'm getting like it almost feels pointless to binge on stuff, you know. So I've been focusing more on writing, because I've been writing my own book and my last issue. I'm kind of the same way. Like, I can't write and have stuff on. So for me, it's either silence or like rain or white noise in the background. Yeah. So I've actually been doing more of that. I've actually kind of took a little break from the binging, because I kind of felt that I was in a void, and I don't know if I could get out of that. But by writing stuff, I felt that I was creating something new. So I'm kind of in that in that space right now. I mean, because normally, I mean, I have, you know, Netflix, Amazon, Hulu, Disney Plus, and then I have VPN.
Check.
You know, check out different content from different countries. You know, so I've probably seen some of it or most of it, or, you know, the last thing I finished was season 4 of Billions, and to get ready for season 5. And then I was watching The Terra on AMC.
Yeah.
And then I was watching C on Apple TV. Yeah. And then I was watching Hunter.
Oh, I watched that one. C?
Actually, I
watched that one as well.
Yeah.
Actually, the one show that I thought was a blast was Hunters on, I'm not sure if you guys have seen it yet, on Amazon.
Oh, what? Yes.
With Al Pacino, man.
Oh, yes. He did a fantastic. Yes, I did watch that as well.
I thought the whole story was great in the way that they did it. So that was fun to kind of see. So it's kind of really interesting because I think
the comic book stuff
today is so sort of adjacent to what's happening in film and television. You know, and I think it's pretty obvious that comic books have become sort of research and development for these other mediums. So I've always felt that there's like a really closer relationship more than ever now between the comic book medium and television and film. So I kind of feel that the stuff that we're doing in comics is translatable to that. So I love, you know, sort of keeping abreast of which shows are out there, which ones, you know, kind of feel that they would be coming from the comic book world. So I'm kind of like, you know, in that space right now where I feel more like creating and writing new stuff to maybe fit into those worlds down the line. Because it's really interesting because like I'm a comic book artist and I love the comic book business and the comic book industry, but things are changing, you know, and I think this pandemic has kind of really highlighted how fragile the actual comic book business is. You know, so you have to ask
for yourself, sure,
because I see a lot of people. I read recently, like on Twitter, people were basically saying that if comic books went digital, that they would stop reading comics. You know, and that was really like disappointing to hear some of those comments because it made me ask myself, and I think all of us, like, are we proponents of the comic book medium or the comic book format? That's a big difference.
Yeah. Well, I think this is my hot take on that, but I've seen some similar kind of, you know, polls and people talking about that stuff on various social media platforms. And I think there's two things there. One is people's primary experience of digital comics is a PDF on an iPad. And so, you know, there's just the same thing, but it's not as good and it's just as expensive. So I think that's a lot of people's immediate kind of drawback or knee-jerk reaction to digital is like, if I'm going to pay the same amount of money, I want this thing that I've also been taught is a collectible and may have value. And, you know, there's this, you know, still an attachment to that. And then I think the other thing is, you know, the general comics industry or what we think of as the comics industry is so focused on the direct market that the other things that are working outside of that generally don't get talked about. And so, you know, when you look at something like Panel Syndicate, for example, which is amazing, and you know, they're doing incredibly well, doing something completely non-traditional. And even that is a, you know, digital PDF, but it's, you know, being delivered in a different way and in a unique way. You know, Webtoons being kind of our primary, you know, touch point, you know, it's like 90 billion views last year. I mean, that is so much larger, than you know, the amount of people that actually read a print comic book last year. So, you know, it's like the appetite is out there. It's just that, you know, the traditional comic store, you know, goer and reader, which I was one for years and years and years and years, wouldn't trade that for anything. Yeah. But, you know, they're 40-year-olds. They're not, you know, they're not 20 or 18 or 12. And, you know, that's the generation that I think we have to be really looking for as far as how are they consuming this stuff? How are they getting this stuff? What are they interested in? And that's where the medium can grow and thrive and evolve. It's the next generation of readers.
It's true. It's not,
you know, just the guy that wants to go read Spider-Man and Batman, you know. And in the meantime, you know, I was having this conversation earlier today with somebody that it's like, you know, you have got to know that Marvel and DC, which is really Disney and AT&T, are behind closed doors going, we don't care what happens. Like, you know, we're going to serve the direct market in a way that makes us look good. But you know AT&T has a digital strategy that they're not talking about publicly. And obviously Disney does as well. So, you know, it's like, as far as that goes, it's like the behemoths, the drivers of the industry, you know, they're going to do whatever they do.
That
and
is true.
The rest of the industry that's left to kind of pick up the pieces. And that's, you know, that's why I think, you know, those of us as especially independent creators have got to be looking at how do we take control of our own destiny around this stuff? How do we find the audience that wants to consume and or interact with and read the stuff that we want to make? And some of that may be through traditional channels, but I think the bigger opportunity.
Sure. And even publishers, that's even small and medium-sized publishers, they're all looking for streams of income right now because, you know, it's all halt. You know, there's people can't go to the shop. It was already collapsing, but the whole pandemic just set things in motion much faster.
Totally.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, it's such a wonderful industry and it's such a weird industry all at the same time. And it's, you know, it's kind of amazing that it's survived the way that it has for as long as it has. Mm-hmm. And it's a real testament to the impact that the art form does have on people and that these characters do have on people. You know, what other business is, you know, basically propped up by 3,000 retail locations that are all mostly mom and pop stores. I mean, there's really nothing else I can think of that's analogous to that.
Such a premium. You know, listen, I love supporting and I do as much.
Yeah,
as I can,
but, exactly.
You know, $4 for a 20-page book, man, is. I mean, that's a month of Disney Plus if you signed up for the deal.
So that's a month of Macroverse right there.
A lot of money that you're spending for that content. Mm-hmm. And the sad thing is that there's so many fantastic stories that are being produced. I think the comic book medium is producing some of the most exciting stuff. The problem is we can't reach the proper amount of audiences that probably would like they don't even know it's out there, you know, and that's part of this problem with the direct market, which is very complicated. It's so many sessions to even break it down. It's taken me years to even understand a basic formatting of how it works. And it's a very, very unique industry, but until that sort of price point can come down, you're never going to be able to open this up to a larger audience. So that's where a platform like Macroverse or some of the digital solutions, I think, are definitely going to be in the right direction toward maintaining this medium and keeping it alive. Because the industry, and I do not want it to fail. I do not want it to go away. I want it to sort of integrate and grow and expand. But that's going to be very challenging.
The print copies are not going to disappear. You know, the books are not going to disappear. I mean, it's probably more like LPs with music.
Right. Interesting. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. No, I mean, that's my, if I had to fortune tell or prognosticate, that is what I think is going to happen is that it may take another decade, but I think floppies there's just no place for floppies in the world over a certain period of time. And then I think there will always be people that want the physical product, that want the collectibility,
interaction with the
love
medium,
the kind of on the format.
Which I love.
Book to
I love.
Shelf.
Of course.
Exactly. But I think that becomes the premium tier for the collector that wants it. Whereas a huge audience of people already are, you know, in the mindset of like, I don't care about owning it. I just want access. And that's where the, you know, the digital platforms come in. It's like, you know, you have easy access to this stuff that you want to consume all the
time. And for publishers, the companies, it's a matter of doing a much, much smaller print run. And having just limited editions or having just a small print that if buying the box set.
Yeah.
If you want the box set.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
You know. Totally.
But
exactly. You know, that allows us to serve people, I think, in an even better way, where you're really giving people what they want, the way they want it, when they want
but
it.
But I do feel like,
you know, and making things much more accessible,
like Macroverse, and having access to the stories digitally and from anywhere. I mean, that's that's definitely the future. I mean, that's where most things are going to get consumed, and people are going to start reading more and more and more and more and more. Yeah. And then they'll decide. I still buy DVDs. Actually, I'm supposed to get a DVD today. What's that?
Edward. I'm sorry. Yeah. I didn't mean to interrupt.
If I really love a movie, I'll buy the DVD. I want to have it. I want to see the behind the scenes. I want to see all the bonus material and all that stuff. So, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, we're in such an interesting kind of inflection moment in all of these arenas, let alone just life in general. and it's, you know, I think what you guys said, which, you know, really resonated with me, is like, what a great time, despite all the challenges, what a great time to focus on bringing something new to the world and being a creator and, you know, figuring out ways to express yourself, you know, inside of all of this. And yeah, I think that's something that I think we all want to do and endeavor to do and want to help empower other people to do.
Take this weird moment and turn it into something.
The most important thing is to love the process, not just the end goal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
You have to love the process. You have to love creating the stories for, you know, for creators. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, just keep pushing for them to create and tell the story. Mm-hmm. And love writing and love drawing and love coloring and love because when it's out and that high is gonna last for maybe a month. Because after that month you're gonna go back and start writing your next story.
And then if you
mm-hmm. hate the process, then this is not for you.
I mean that's such absolutely. A I mean that's probably a good kind of wrap up point, but that's such a good life lesson in general. I think, you know, it takes people sometimes quite a while to learn to just love the process of doing it and lose some attachment to the end result, and often those are the things that actually work out the best. Well, guys, awesome. I don't know if there's any final thoughts that you want to share here, but I just really appreciate, you know, both of who you are, what you're doing, the work that you do. Again, we're just thrilled to have your work as part of what we're trying to do with Macroverse. The first episode will be out for subscribers tomorrow, and then next week when episode 2 comes out, then that one will go free for everyone to be able to dive into. And then they'll be coming out weekly until they're done.
Awesome. Beautiful. Excited.
Yeah, it's awesome stuff. Any final words from you guys or Adam? Anything for you want to say at the end here?
I'm great. It's been a great conversation. It's been a fascinating kind of dive into the whole process. These are the fun conversations to have with people, because it's similarities with how people work, and then obviously it's great.
Yeah,
just great, guys. Yeah. Really appreciate the time.
No, yeah. Thank you, man, and thank you guys for reaching out and asking about Black Birch. Because that was the book that, you know, we have been trying to shop around. But when this thing happened, it kind of shut down all of our activities. So I'm glad that Eduardo kind of made the smart move and decided to sort of collect it as a trade. And I think we put out that 100 PDF copies. And I think it was through that post that we got your attention, Evan.
Yeah.
Contacted me. So I'm glad to see, you know, that we were able to make some movements, even though everything was kind of shut down. And now we're on the Macroverse platform, and I'm super happy about that. And I can't wait to kind of follow this adaptation on the platform and to sort of see it grow and see if we can generate some good attention and more participation.
Yeah.
Thank you guys for believing in that and giving us a shot at being part of the Macroverse family. So
absolutely our pleasure.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys. Again, really appreciate the time, and really nice chatting with you, and there will be more to come.
Yes.
Who's the cat? I hear a cat.
Sorry, that is my cat.
Oh, that's
who just jumped in. He's awesome. Part Siamese and is the loudest cat I have ever had. It is quite amazing. He's the first kind of ever had. Yes. His meows will actually wake you up at night. It's ridiculous.